This is Tabletop Babble, and I'm Amber. Hello! Today on the show, I sat down with Dylan Goss, who's writing a webcomic called Mara, based on his level 1 to 20 5e D&D campaign. The titular character Mara is displaced from her homeland and seeks fulfillment in the world at large. I chatted with Dylan on August 24th about turning the campaign into a cohesive and engaging narrative, finding an illustrator and the working relationship between the two, and then the power of language both within Mara and in real life as well. Hi, Dylan, and welcome to Tabletop Babble. For my listeners, would you please introduce yourself, your pronouns, and what you do in the TTRPG space?
My name is Dylan Goss. Pronouns are he, him. My contribution to the TTRPG space is a comic. It is a dramatized retelling of a 1 to 20 D&D campaign.
I am excited about that. I, as a illustrator, graphic designer, in my past, I've had aspirations of turning my campaigns into comics. So I'm really excited to talk to you today about that. Before we get into it, though, I'm interested in you. So how did you get started playing TTRPGs?
I don't remember exactly how old I was, but my age was definitely single digits. My parents took me to a yard sale. I have $10. $10 in my pocket, that's all I had. And they were selling three game boxes. One of them was second edition, the red box, the starter red box, second edition, older than I am. I think it's from 1976. And they also had Advanced D&D second edition, and Top Secret, which is a less well-known RPG. It's around the same time. It's a spy. You're all spies, but like, you're like James Bond spies. You're not real spies. And it has a really brutal damage system with damage zones and all of that. But they were saying one of those sets was $10. Well, all I have is $10, and the dragon on the red box looks cool, so I'm going to get that. And as we were leaving, the woman running the yard sale came up to my mom's side of the car, and she said, "Hey, your son was the only one who showed any interest in any of these, so you might as well take all of them." That was Christmas and happy birthday, Easter. That was everything for me on that day. So I took them home, and the starter set had a single player starter campaign with a pre-made fighter, and that was my first character death. I failed the con save on the snake bite, and that was my first character death too. But ever since, I've been really into fantasy in general, of course TTRPGs, but as long as I've been able to write, I've been writing about dragons and adventurers.
I was going to say, did you get any playtime with Top Secret? Because I have never heard of that game.
I got some playtime with that. I roped my friends into playing. And the mechanics are, well, they're certainly of that era. I'll
yes, that. Yes.
It's I actually got a hold of a PDF the other day. And it was pretty nostalgic to go back through it. I was reading through it, and I was like, man, younger me put up with some nonsense in the rules, because we have come a long way.
Yes. One of my early, well, I wouldn't say early experiences, I have a friend who is from that era, and will bring out every once in a while a game from his bookshelf. And I remember playing Boot Hill and like Traveler, and yeah, like I remember you said Top Secret had like damage zones, and I was just picturing like the cowboy's damage zone silhouette. Yeah, there was really no role playing back then, which is fun to see how it was way more tactical back then.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I guess we can kind of like go forward now. You've got fantasy and dragons in your mind. That's the genre that spoke to you. Let's talk about Mara. So I'm interested in the campaign. So go ahead and just tell us a little bit about that.
So, the GM is not the GM in this. I was actually the player who played Mara. Everything is still not great in that world. Water is still scarce, metal is still scarce, people haven't believed in gods for a long time, and the gods that are around aren't great guys for the most part. When we were making our characters, we were told, your weapons are probably lacquered bone or stone or something to that effect. So that's where the idea for the axe being a dragon's jawbone came from.
So how long was that? How long has that? Is it still an ongoing campaign, or has it already wrapped up? Are you guys still doing stuff with it?
So the campaign was about 2 years. It's also the only 1 to 20 campaign I've ever been.
I have never been all the way to 20. Never. I think 13 was the highest.
I've heard it's a bit of a mythical creature.
I mean, by the time we got to like levels 13, 15, combat became such a unwieldy beast of like, all right, this is just the combat session today. But it was really fun. So I guess I'm interested in like your character, and then also like who is Mara?
Mara is mechanically a totem barbarian, which I guess shouldn't come as much of a surprise. She is from a small fishing village of the Rain tribe, and what happened was her village, well, her people are based on the real life Inuit and Vikings, which means that they had to undergo some pretty significant changes when their climate changed. This during the war between the gods, the sky was set on fire. And that is an ecological disaster of such amazing proportions. So they went from ice fishing to having the only river around, wearing much warmer weather clothing. They had to change their entire way of living so drastically that they lost a lot of their beliefs and their culture. And one of the things they lost over generations was their language. They took on the common language so that they'd be able to trade because they were no longer self-sufficient. Part of their culture that they lost, and they've always worshipped the ancestral wolf spirit that they now call Amaru, but that just means wolf in their native language. What happened was the writings that survived, they thought this was a proper name, and they started calling their ancestral wolf spirit Amaru. Another thing they lost was the trial to determine who would become the totem warrior of their tribe. So with no one doing the trial, no one has been that warrior for a long time. And when another tribe came in and raided their settlement, the wolf spirit was pretty much unable to do anything due to the laws that bound them, until there was only one person left in the tribe. Then it was still a bit of bending the rules, but he was able to say, well, you're clearly the most worthy now because you're the only one left. So that's how Mara became the wolf totem warrior. She was just the one that happened to hide the best when the raiders showed up. So she was never really the chosen one so much as the lucky one.
Got it. Cool. My brain wheels are turning right now. As a person who, we play D&D, we play tabletop RPGs, taking your campaign that you're in, and then you're acting as the writer for this comic. So as the writer for this comic, what's that process been like? Is it a direct retelling, or is it more inspired by?
I have stuck to the campaign as closely as possible, but anyone who plays D&D will tell you that there's sometimes that the dice just don't make for a dramatic story. You fail a save and you die, sorry. We don't really have save or die so much in 5e, which is what the campaign was played in, but there are definitely times you will have a character death if you fail a save. And it just doesn't really make for a good storytelling moment. Certain things had to be focused on more than others. Combats were definitely dramatized because I roll to attack over and over isn't the best story.
Prior to writing this comic, were you doing any other writing?
I don't have any writing up in a professional sense. Most of my writing that anybody else reads, it's for my close-knit Discord friends, and it's just more like narrative practice than anything else. Like, hey guys, I wrote something to practice my writing, see if you like it, sort of thing, right? So what happens with my process of writing is that I will get an idea, and if I don't do anything with it, I won't really get any mental rest until I write it down. So my process is chaos. Absolutely. I definitely look up to authors like Stephen King. I know he's written a few stinkers, but he definitely has good writing. Absolutely. For a guy with so much out there, it's hard to justify calling him a bad writer. And what he says to do is every day, 6 pages written and edited. Well, I don't do that. As much as I respect the guy, that is not my process at all. My process is when I latch onto an idea, I will just churn out as much as humanly possible until I no longer have that idea bouncing around in my head. There have been times that I haven't written anything for weeks, but that's okay because I'm so far ahead that it's going to take Rosie quite a while to catch up with all of my writing.
That's what my next question was going to be. Working with other people as far as, taking your work and then translating it into an actual, comic, how much is it like script writing, and how much are you doing as art direction? Are you doing art direction as well?
Well, I give Rosie as much creative freedom as possible, and it has paid off. The typical way of writing comics now actually comes from Marvel. They have a script format that a lot of writers use, and it's a good format. But I think the important thing is to have a format that everybody on the team understands and can work with well. Rosie prefers to do the paneling herself, and right away that kind of eliminates the Marvel format because the writer determines what goes in which panel. So we went through a few different possibilities for the script format, but what we settled on, you probably wouldn't actually recognize as a script at all. It looks more like a novel. And then there are image references at the end of the document. So she takes that and she decides how much and what goes on every page.
Wow, that's a lot of trust. But looking at her artwork, holy moly, it's beautiful.
Part of the reason I'm open to doing this is the interview process when I was selecting an artist. I have a friend I've worked with on a few contracts as a software developer, and she does user interface design, and she also does some comics. Of course, I offered her the job first, but she said, "Well, this is fantasy. I don't really do fantasy. I do sci-fi." But she went to art school, so of course she has a lot of contacts there. She put out an ad on Facebook for me and got about a dozen emails on the first day. Some artists definitely better than others, if not more talented, then better at presenting themselves. A couple of them didn't have a portfolio, and I'm sorry, but I need to be able to evaluate your art. So I ended up shortlisting three people. And two of them, they're good. They're obviously good artists, but I just didn't feel like, yeah, this is definitely what I want to go with. Well, when Rosie sent me her work, that is the feeling I got. So, you have to go with your gut. I gave them each a paid commission because don't ask people to work for free. That's very rude. Paid commission to do a concept art of Mara. And I didn't actually say, this is her skin tone, her hair is this long. I didn't give them any of that. I just gave her age and any info about her tribe. And of course, if they had any questions, I was there to answer them, but I wanted to see what people came up with. None of them were bad. None of them were bad. But one of them really clicked a lot more than the others. And at the end of the day, I could only hire one person.
I'm looking at her Instagram right now, which is Rosie Rosi Woo Woo, and I really enjoy her artwork. So I think I wish I was better at describing, in a podcast format. It's really hard to be like, ah, yes, I am looking at her artwork and it looks beautiful. Take my word for it. I have no way to describe art. But she, I don't know. There's just a. It is painterly, but it feels like a still like a comic book, like that co like a more cartoony feel, but with the painterly kind of aspect to how she's handling her coloring and her brush strokes. So it's really pretty. I'm interested in, you've talked about how Mara comes from this tribe that is kind of based off of Inuit and Viking culture and history. How did you come to that? Was it like a campaign thing? And did you do any research or had any like cultural consultation in this area of the
So I did a lot of research. This was not part of the campaign because my group prefers to write their own backstories. And while some of it is going to be connected to the campaign, none of us have really said, "Hey, GM, tell me what my backstory is," sort of thing. So yes, I did a lot of research on this, and some ideas didn't make the cut, of course. The thing is, with the Inuit, there isn't as much information as you would probably suspect. But I was able to find a couple of places that teach about language, and that was really valuable to me because they actually have sounds we don't have in English. And for instance, in Amaru, the Q is actually a throat sound, is not like the English K. The best way I can describe it would be if you tried to pronounce K in your throat instead of with your tongue. Yeah. So I have listened to native speakers just over and over, different speakers with different dialects, saying the same word over and over. And that was very valuable to me just to really get in the headspace. And I know it probably sounds like you heard one word come on, but there is something about hearing native speakers that really gets you more into the zone and really makes you want to learn more, not just for the narrative but to continue to be in the headspace of these people. And I've done my best to present them respectfully, and I've done my best to practice the pronunciation. And I'm sure that I don't have perfect pronunciation, but I'm doing my little best.
Yeah, when you've been grown up in the Midwest for so long and your tongue and your mouth's muscles just don't wrap the right way because of stuff. I have a friend who's French Canadian, and she hates when I say anything in French, and she'll try and correct me, and I'm like, oh, Genevieve, my mouth does not move that way. I try so hard, though, but there's just that Midwestern twang I cannot get out of my mouth.
Oh, absolutely. My accent is definitely all over the place. I was born in Southern Illinois, but I moved to Belize when I was pretty young, and now I'm living in Taiwan. And I know I have some obnoxious speaking habits. The Spanish influence on Belize means that we've grown up considering male nouns to be gender neutral. A lot of people dislike that, and I'm sorry, but that is what we were taught. We were literally taught if you have multiple male and female X of a given noun, use the male plural. This is taught in schools there. So, you know, I'm definitely not trying to offend anybody, but it's just how we were taught.
And language is fascinating. So do you speak several languages?
I speak English and Belizean Creole fluently. I speak Garifuna, which is an African tribal language from that area that I grew up in, poorly. Approximately as well as everybody else in my generation, so I'm okay with that, but the older generation does not approve of my skill in that language. I speak a survival level of Spanish, and I'm trying to do better with Mandarin every day. Mandarin is an obscenely different language than anything I've ever encountered, and yeah, it is very difficult, but I speak it more now that I have a kid. My daughter's almost two, so I've been trying to practice for her sake so that I don't embarrass her at school.
I only speak English and like can kind of read some Spanish, and I am just always in awe of people who can speak multiple. I've talked about it before on the show, my grandmother is from the Philippines, but when she came to America, she was like, forget Tagalog. All of you are American now, and that's all you're going to learn. And she refused to teach her children, my mom and her brothers and sisters, and us, the grandchildren as well. And it makes me so sad because of that. Like, oh, let's assimilate. So let's leave behind our language, which is like one of the great connectors of humanity. So, and like to your culture and stuff. So I feel very disconnected from it. So I think it's super cool that you have that for yourself, these different languages.
Well, it's a similar situation to what I was describing with Mara then, isn't it? In order to give you the best chance in what the world looks like for you now, you didn't learn the native language of your, well, not really a tribe in that sense, but it is that similar situation.
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of sad. I've talked about with other Filipino guests on the show where it's like, because of colonialism, thanks, you know, we have to assimilate, or in Mara, the same kind of stuff is going on. You have to survive. So you kind of bend your entire culture or way of being around the dominant whatever is happening, right? There's obviously something here, the story that you really want to be, you want to tell, right? Like, to the point where you hired an artist and you're making this now. It's kind of like a personal question. It's like, what is Mara to you?
I mentioned before that this was the only time I've ever done a 1 to 20 campaign. And it's the only time anybody I've ever met has done a 1 to 20 campaign. And people I talk to online, very few of them have done a 1 to 20 campaign. Even in Hope Server. We all like Hope Server. But only a couple of people there have also done a 1 to 20. So it's just such a rare occurrence. What ended up happening is I started telling people about this campaign, right? People who weren't there and, you know, talking about cool stuff that happened, and not so cool stuff that happened, because I just couldn't stop talking about it. And then I realized I really like talking about this. I want to tell everybody, but what's the best way to tell everybody? And I have done some attempts at storytelling before. About 10 years ago, I wanted to get into game development. It seemed like the obvious choice because I'm a software developer, but it took me quite a while to realize that I was doing game development for entirely the wrong reasons. While a good story can make a good game great, the story isn't what makes the game good. And I was really just using this as a vehicle to tell a story. And that's not a good game. So I explored some other ways of telling a story. And while I've definitely written quite a lot, I felt like it just didn't have the same impact without a visual aspect. People have good imaginations, but I really wanted to be able to see something. And then I went back to all the comics I've read. My dad picked up a lot of comics from a yard sale when I was pretty young, like dollar a box, fill up the back of my truck sort of thing. And it was all 70s comics. A lot of Spider-Man, a lot of Wonder Woman, mostly Marvel. For some reason, there was a lot of Wonder Woman mixed in with Marvel. Not sure why, but it was good, so I didn't complain about it. And then it clicked, and I just thought, wow, I don't know why this wasn't more obvious for me.
So doing it now primarily as a webcomic, do you have plans of ever doing it in print, or is it just going to be primarily online?
So I talked to a few people about this, and most people who want to see it in print want to see it when it's done, as opposed to every issue separately or every chapter separately. So I think that's what we're going to do. We're going to finish it, and then we're going to take it to print.
Cool. I also noticed that you have it in several languages, which is amazing.
What happened there was I wasn't planning on translating it at all at first. And then someone approached me and said, hey, I want to do comics, and I just graduated. I'm a professional translator. And can you give me a job translating? I said, well, that sounds really cool, but you know there aren't very many words in comics, right? I'm not going to be having a lot of work for you. He said, oh, that's fine. I just want to be involved, you know. And what's funny is he didn't actually work out as a translator, but the idea was already there. So Rosie is doing the Chinese translations now. And we have a Portuguese translator, Brazilian Portuguese specifically. And boy, Brazilian comic fans are something else, let me tell you. They are.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. They are they bring the same energy they bring to soccer games, let me tell you. half of my Facebook followers are from Brazil.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think it might even be a little bit more than half, but about that, yeah. And it's also in Spanish as well, because why not at that point?
Sure. That's awesome, because I usually don't see very many web comics that are just starting out that already have baked into it 4 different languages right off the bat.
Yeah, you know, the thing about web comics get a bad rap, because anybody can do it, which means a lot of people doing it is going to lower the average quality. And I hate to say that because it sounds like I'm dunking on them, but a lot of people are just doing it because they want to put something online. And that's fine. People should be allowed to do that. And it is unfortunate that people don't take webcomics seriously as a result, but I wanted to be taken seriously. And in order to have other people take you seriously, you need to take your own work seriously. So I didn't want to just get my buddy who knows how to draw. I didn't want to get my buddy who knows Spanish. You know, I wanted to have professionals every step of the way.
Sure. Yeah. And the website looks great. And again, I can see the care that has been put into the presentation of everything. And again, I think it looks beautiful and I'm excited to read it.
Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a D&D and TTRPG discussion podcast. Today I'm here with Jeremy from Three Black Halflings.
Hello!
Bard's had a bad rap.
Yeah. Is that a pun, baby? Is that a pun?
I did a pun!
A bad rap?
I made a pun! I'm terrible at puns.
Yeah.
The world that we're going to be in is living and breathing. This isn't going to be a Saturday morning cartoon game.
In my Friday game, there was a lot of things that led up to a consequence that we didn't anticipate. And as it was unfolding, we're like, oh, we caused all of this.
Hey, you just got your first game design credit. Because yes. It totally counts. Ugh, one more step to taking over the world for you. I'm so
yes.
proud.
It opened the door for them to explore a world for a genre that they've never explored before, but in a system that they were familiar with.
Don't be afraid to make mistakes.
And so it's just nice to hear when people are really getting into their sh-
Every Monday, wherever podcasts can be found, as we talk about important and fun topics within the TTRPG community.
So I want to know how you talked a little bit about the language stuff in Mara. How is that like your focus is? I don't want to, let's say this. I'm getting excited because whenever I get on a topic that's like really interesting to me, I start to get mumble mouth. But
sure, sure.
So before I ask that question, how much of this comic is already out versus how much is already basically written?
We just put the entirety of chapter 1 on Patreon. I have written and fully edited, it's totally done, up to chapter 8. Rosie is still working on chapter 2. And I've seen some of chapter 2 and it looks great. Yeah, the entirety of chapter 1 is going to be on the free site fairly soon. They're a couple of weeks behind at this point, but that's okay because Patreon is supposed to be ahead. As for how far we are in, because I feel like that question is coming and I'd like to address it now, for how far we are in, it's hard to say because the naming, which is what they call separating into panels and pages in comics, the naming is not fully done, but I am estimating 20 chapters. And I think that is going to be a pretty close estimate.
A campaign from 1 to 20 with 20 chapters.
Yeah, fingers crossed that it lines up that way. It might be a little bit more, though. It probably won't be less, but it might be a little bit more.
Okay, so then my question in regards to like that kind of stuff, how much are you willing to reveal? Because my question is more along the lines of like Mara's journey, essentially. Do we stick with her for this? I mean, it's her, she's the titular character, so I'm assuming we will.
Yeah.
I want to know things, but I don't know how to ask the things.
Do you want to know why it's named after her?
Yeah, I suppose that's a good start. Like, Dylan, I'm having a hard time. Help me. What, Dylan, what do I want to know about Mara?
Well, I can tell you why it's named after her, but you can't unhear
it. Okay.
She's the only survivor.
Got it.
She's the only constant. Pretty much everyone she meets, and this is the tragic part of Mara, not just her backstory. This is a tragic character. And it was this way when we were playing it. Pretty much every friend she makes is destined to die. And no matter how hard she fights, no matter how strong she is, the only person at the end of the day she can really protect is herself. One of the player characters literally died in her arms. She was running as fast as she could to get this poor man some medical attention, and he just died in her arms. And there was nothing she could do about Aww. It.
So what I'm hearing is don't read Mara, think you're going to get a happy bunnies hopping through the meadow heartwarming story is what I'm hearing.
Not super heartwarming. God. I mean, things improve for her later on, but it's much, much later on.
Got it. I'm a fan of tragic characters. I just got done reading Gideon the Ninth and Harrow the Ninth. Are you a fan of or are familiar with those books?
I'm familiar enough to get why they're being brought up right now.
Oh, these tragic teens doing the necromancy in space. just people, you get close to somebody and then they're gone kind of situation. And I'm getting yeah. that. I like those kinds of stories. I'm not saying I like relish them. I like exploring trauma through media and seeing how characters react to the trauma.
And it's also about how it's handled, right? Because if someone is just a punching bag, and then they're just a punching bag forever, and nothing ever improves for them, well, why am I still reading this? This is horrible.
Yeah, I don't want to see someone get abused, essentially, by the narrative for the entire narrative. That's not fun. So then how have you been balancing that kind of aspect? You said it gets better for her later on. She's not really a chosen one. She's just a lucky one. Is there, I mean, we know that there's a some sort of spirit. The D&D influence to all of this, I should say, campaign influence.
This is definitely a saving the world story. The way I'm balancing it is that, yeah, the party does become big damn heroes, but at the same time, Mara is kind of not. And I don't mean that in the sense that she's an awful person doing awful things. She's kind of getting dragged along for this ride. And at some point, you know, the wolf spirit tells her, hey, you live in this world. You want a place to live, you got to save this world. You can't ignore this. It's comical in kind of a meta sense, because while she's not a hero, she keeps making enemies of all these horrible creatures and people, and because they have decided to pick a fight with her. Okay, now I'm going to take care of this. It's like, yay, everybody, the hero Mara. I was just defending myself.
I'll let you know that for me, one of the big things, as listeners of Tabletop Babble, if you listen to these episodes sequentially, have heard the progress of Amber's media journey, because I talk about every media I'm into with a person when they come on the show. I really love that kind of concept of not really an unwilling hero, but just like a hero of necessity kind of situation. Like, I really wasn't doing anything but trying to survive, and therefore my consequences had some heroic aspects to it. I like that in a character, too, because I definitely don't like idiot hero tropes or characters who are really played up as the do-gooder. I like those complicated characters.
Yeah. When I was considering doing this comic, there was also another wolf and girl trope comic that was up for consideration. Because D&D is not, well, I've touched on this before, but D&D is not the only RPG I play. Mm-hmm. In fact, for my group, I'm the guy who runs weird things. Well, for my group, because they are pretty much just D&D players, anything that isn't a D20 system is the weird system to them.
Sure.
So I've done Shadowrun a couple mm-hmm. of times for them. Ended up really well, actually. I've done Big Eyes, Small Mouth.
Yeah.
Which was that was just a silly campaign. Right off the bat, it wasn't supposed to be serious. So their silliness was perfect. I told them, you know, everybody pick an existing character from some form of media. Don't bring the original characters. You know, pick something that exists, because I need to be able to look into the lore of your character and give you your adventure that you're taking everybody on. And then the next session, it'll be the other guy's adventure they're taking everybody on. All right. So we got Norman Osborn, Sailor Moon, Vinny from Biker Mice from Mars, and Gage from Borderlands 2.
Wow, that's a great combo.
Complete nonsense. Yeah. It was great.
Funny.
But the other comic that almost won out was an Exalted-based comic. Exalted is a very epic system. You start off as a demigod. Your recommended starting character has a shard of the sun god's power. That's what a Solar is. So right away, just your feet hit the ground and you're doing amazing things. Things that mere mortals could never dream of. And the reason it almost won out is that the threshold, the area that most of the world is considered, has just the most amazing names ever. They don't sound like names that we have. They are whole sentences. The main character in that one would have been called Daughter of the Bright Star. And that's not an atypical name. That's Joe. That's Jane, you know?
Yes.
that's their Sarah.
Yes, I love that kind of, I did that for a Zwahinder game. I made some orcs and their names were like the dawn who rises in the west or something like that. You know, like it was names. I love that kind of stuff too. So good.
Yeah. It would have been a very, very different tone than Mara.
Sure.
But I thought about it and I didn't want to write something about a character who nobody would believe that they could lose. Mara doesn't win every time. Now, I've mentioned that she can't protect other people, but there have been times that she only managed to pull out because of, you know, her party, her friends. And it was kind of difficult for her to reconcile this sort of thing. Like, hey, I'm supposed to be the frontliner. I'm supposed to protect everybody. But what she comes to realize eventually is that a lone wolf is not something you want to be. I've done research into real world lone wolves, and what happens is they either join a new pack or die in very short order. And that's what she has to come to realize on her own, is that wolves don't fight alone.
I've bookmarked your website. So I guess that's actually a good place to start plugging your stuff as we're talking about this. So Dylan, if people want to find Mara and your work, where could they do so?
It is primarily on Mara, that's MARA-comic.com. We also have a Patreon, but you don't have to be a patron to read it. You can read it for free and then decide if you want to back it. And we have some cool perks if you decide to.
And then you also said you had a Facebook page?
Yes, we are on facebook.com/stuffedrockstudio.
Cool.
And on Twitter as Stuffed Rock.
Awesome. Well, if you, dear listener, are interested and enjoyed this interview, I highly suggest you check out Mara. And thank you, Dylan, for coming on and chatting with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. You can find me on Twitter at RocketOrca, Kenny as at Volfmir, and John is at CrosswaysGM. Tabletop Babble is part of the Geekspective Network. Go to geekspective.com to check out all our other shows or follow us on Twitter at Geekspective. Our theme music was provided by the Battle Bards.